Wham! Talk 1600. You're catching the drift. Conservative talk. Intelligent conversations on local, state, and national issues with Gary Wellings, chief editor of the Current newspaper and Current online. Stand up for. Join in the conversation at 734-822-1600. 822-1600. And now, your host, Gary Wellings.
Good Sunday morning. Glad to have you tuning in to catch my drift this Sunday. So I've got a guest coming on today, so I need to kind of move things along here today. I wanted to come on and rant and rave this morning. There's so much to rant about, but it's not Soapbox Sunday. It's Information Day, so we're going to take a big breath and try and get some information on state issues today. And actually, there are national issues because part of it's Obamacare, so we'll go through that with you. But as we do all the time, we go through the news of the week here at The Drift, and you can catch the stuff that I put online for you every day at thedailydrift.com. Now, I just revamped the website, new website. There are going to be some link issues, so if you can't get linked through to something, email me, gary@thedailydrift.com. And you can email me here if you want to have some comments talked about on the show as well. Or call in 734-822-1600. Our sponsor this half hour is still The Rock Shop. ROCK-SHOP, ShOPPE.com. The Rock Shop has a great website. Now, they're located on Godfredson and North Territorial Road, just north of M14's exit 15 there. And Marco and Helena Scapatici do a wonderful job with hardscape. If you've never been to the Rock Shop, be prepared to be amazed because they do have a great selection of hardscape, pavers, wall building materials, fountains, garden benches, statuary, all the cool stuff you really want to have around your deck area or your porch area. So check them out. Again, go to that website, ROCK-SHOP, ShOPPE.com. And you can reach them 734-455-5560. I think Rocktoberfest is wrapping up here. So call them and say you want to get a deal. You heard it here at The Drift. And they are good people. They support the station. They support this program. And they've got just a really cool selection of stuff out there. So check it out. Take the kids out and check out the Rock Shop they got in back. Okay, so today we are going to cover school reform. And we are going to try and touch on Obamacare. And if we can get through into some national politics, I'd love to because I'm really flamed up this week. If you are, I'd like to hear from you as well. But Ann Arbor Schools, AnnArbor.com, had a nice article yesterday about Pat Green, the school superintendent for Ann Arbor Schools, and a bunch of other bureaucrats who are against what the legislature is trying to do with school reform right now. So I'm sure there are some teachers calling. I'd like to get your view and see if you're on board with the bureaucrats, or if you'd like to see some reform. We have Audrey Spaulding calling in shortly. She's an education policy analyst with the Mackinac Center for Public Policy. And again, you know, Michigan Capital Confidential is probably one of the best news sources for state issues. You can catch their links at thedailydrift.com or currentonline.com or garywellings.com. Get out there and educate yourself by going to the Daily Drift every day. You know, take a few minutes. I spend time going through that to try and weed out what you don't need or what you won't hear and put it up there for you to peruse and educate yourself. So, excuse me. House Bill 6004, Senate Bill 1358, and House Bill 5923 are kind of designed to help children, to help students. They are a big change. They're not there to help the standard school model. You know, some people have said, no, there's nothing wrong with the school system. I'd say, yes, there is. Then a lot of people will say, well, we just need more money. Well, we've thrown more money at school system over the last 10 years than ever before, and students are still failing. Test scores are not doing well. Now, this is I can't make that broad general statement because there are some districts that do really well. Ann Arbor School District used to be top-notch. I don't know that they're top-notch anymore. They're still good, but they're not doing as well as they were. And there's a reason for that. Wow, it's one of those days I've got something caught in my throat here. So if you have a child in Ann Arbor schools, I'd love to hear from you. You tell me your thoughts on what's going on. But Patricia Green, Christine Steed, are against the reform bills. They're saying they'll drastically change the definition of public education in Michigan. Now, these bills, allegedly according to them, propose reforms such as anytime, anywhere, and any place education. Well, I'm not sure that I'm against that. They also propose more voucher. Well, I kind of like that too. I mean, a student who's going to school in the state of Michigan deserves the best education they can possibly get. There's no doubt about that. And for me, I've always been one of those voucher guys because I've been in schools that are good, and I think everyone should have that opportunity. But there are a lot of children who go to schools that are not so good. Calling in right now, Audrey Spaulding. Audrey, good morning and welcome.
Good morning. Thanks for having me on.
Well, thanks for getting up. I know that you said you're at a conference there in Washington.
That's right.
Okay. So Audrey is an education policy analyst for Michigan Capital Confidential and the Mackinac Center for Public Policy. And you've written a number of great articles. And can you explain a little bit about House Bill 604 and the Senate Bill 1358 and 5923, how they would change what we currently have?
Okay, sure. In terms of the Education Achievement Authority bill, that's the state entity right now that's operating, I believe, 15 schools in the Detroit area. Legislators are interested in expanding its authority to operate schools statewide. So the idea would be that if a Michigan school has been in the bottom 5% of all Michigan schools for three consecutive years, then this entity could take it over and basically start changing things. So instead of waiting again and again and hearing more promises, you know, let's reform, we promise we'll do reform this time, the state would basically step in.
Okay, so this is kind of like an emergency financial manager for townships and cities too, right? Very similar.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, for schools, this would be for schools.
Right.
The other issue that you were talking about just before I called in is the school aid rewrite, and that's actually, I think, the really interesting and really exciting proposal to really fundamentally change the way that we fund schools in Michigan. And the idea would be transitioning from district-based funding to really focusing on having those dollars follow kids to different schools. I heard you use the voucher word when you were talking about it, and that's kind of, I think, a piece of misinformation that's floating out there, because a voucher system would be if public dollars could follow kids to private schools. And that's something that's prohibited in the Michigan Constitution, and that's not what this is about. This is really kind of freeing up those dollars to follow kids to other public options.
Okay, so it only allows them to go to other public entities, not to private schools?
Not to private schools, no.
Okay.
And I think we're really seeing the what I would call the education establishment, school board members, school administrators, school superintendents, using that voucher word because it is something that voters in Michigan have overwhelmingly rejected.
Okay,
and,
so let me ask you real quick. I guess I'm confused then, and maybe the listeners are as well. If a charter school or a charter schools are not always private, some of them are public.
They are authorized. They contract with a private company in some cases to run the school. They are authorized. You have to have an authorizer. Like a private company can't just come in and set up a charter school and start accepting state money. It has to be paired with an authorizer, and that authorizer can be a university or a nonprofit. So that's where that public component comes in. It's not just some entity comes in and says, "Okay, we're starting a charter school. Give us state money."
Okay, so there's probably a huge piece of the pie that people don't understand because you just educated me. A charter school is not necessarily a private school because it is affiliated with a public university or college. Then.
Yeah.
And so it is part of the public system.
Yeah, it is part of the public system. I think a lot of people also with charter schools view them as not having the public interest at heart either. And we've just seen I've been visiting the private the uh, the Highland Park schools that are operated by the Leona Group, which is a private company, but it's actually headed by Dr. Bill Coates, who used to be a superintendent in Grosse Pointe in Kalamazoo. And they absolutely have the public interest at heart, and they're all about making the community a better place. They have that community orientation, you know, how do we as a school serve the community, which is, I think when you hear people who criticize charter schools, they completely overlook that and say, you know, charter schools are only there to siphon public dollars from conventional public schools.
Right. Now, Highland Park is near and dear to my heart. I used to teach at, I was actually a director at Highland Park Community College, and we had a building trades program there. And then I taught a full year at Highland Park's Adult Ed doing the EDGE program, Education Designed for Gainful Employment, I think it stood for. And got to know some people there and enjoyed it. And I always thought Highland Park was kind of looking, you know, creatively to, because they knew they were in a bad situation. So those were decent programs. Mm-hmm. It's too bad the funding dried up for them.
Yeah, well, I mean, at the time, the conventional school district running Highland Park was spending, I think, nearly $20,000 per kid, and they were not receiving that much money, so it was financially unsustainable. Again, the Leona Group, the company that's now overseeing the management of those schools, has strived to bring in people who are quality people, but also to hire back some of the very quality teachers who are already present in the school system.
Right. So these reforms really aren't designed to hurt schools. They're designed to help the children, which, you know, for me is the ultimate. I mean, we're here for the students. We're not here for the bureaucrats. We're not here even for the teachers. I mean, I don't – God love the teachers. If you're a good one, I know you get banged by me alone sometimes, but I'm not generally broad-based wiping them out. There are – 98% of the teachers out there are stellar, I think, but –
Right.
You know, it's those 2% that are ruining for the rest of them.
Yeah, I think that's really – the school aid rate, I think, is really interesting when you say, you know, this is about the children, not about the system. I mean, it is. It's a choice-based system. So, you know, when you hear statements, you know, this threatens our public schools, and that stand-in is for what we think of as a conventional public school with a school board and a school district as opposed to a charter school or an online school, even though those are all also part of the public school system, it's a choice-based system. So you're only going to lose students if they choose to leave because you're not serving their needs. And I think that's something that was really lost in this conversation because we should be focusing on the students. You know, if we do have a school that is not serving the needs of its students and they do choose to leave to go to a school, for example, in another district or a charter school or take advantage of online learning options, you know, what really is so bad about that? They now are in, they now are attending a school that is going to serve their needs better than where they were.
Yeah. I live in Whitmore Lake, and we have our Whitmore Lake schools are school of choice. I think South Lyon schools are also school of choice, and I think Brighton might be school of choice now. I'm pretty sure they are. I've got three school districts. They're always fighting for our kids. And for me, I'm thinking, what's wrong with that? You know, they're constantly evolving, trying to make things better, to steal kids from each other. And that's competition. I mean, that's a healthy American way. I think it drives each of those school systems to perform better. I think if they had more flexibility as far as unions and contracts and stuff, they could probably do even more. But I don't see anything. What is so wrong, Audrey, with competition?
Right, and I think the other component, though, is, you know, you're describing the school of choice system where, you know, schools are fighting for these kids. One of the structural problems, though, is when you talk about, okay, a child moved from Whitmore Lake to, say, another school, what happens to the state funding that's associated with that child? In the past system, 90% of state funding was determined by where that child sat on count day in the fall. We did free that up. There was a state rule that was passed that said, you know, if that child moves to another school, that school can tell the state, we now have that child, start sending us the state funding associated with that child. That all sounded well and good, but in terms of the record keeping and the paperwork, it was a nightmare. And part of this school aid rewrite, Richard McClellan, the attorney who put this together, actually sent a letter to the state saying, we are hearing anecdotally that this is not being done in terms of having the funds follow those kids. Like, that the state does not actually have the capability to do this right now. So part of this proposal is to create a system in which when the child moves, the school that is receiving that child starts getting the state funding. Because if you think about it, you know, you're describing, well, we do want this competition. We do want schools trying to better serve students and advertise to them. Well, a school is actually being penalized if they take on a student, but that state funding doesn't follow that student. They're serving that student, but not getting funding for that student.
Right. And it's not fair to the student or the teacher because, or the student and the parent, because you don't know for a fact that this year your kid goes into his first. It may be a few weeks or a month before the student and parent realize that this school, this grade level, whatever, is not working for them. So, right. I mean, you may think Ann Arbor schools are great and get your kid in there and have problems and not be able to transfer them. The money won't transfer. That's a great idea to have the money follow the child, because you know what? We're paying for that. Even those of us – I paid for years taxes to support schools before I ever had a child, and I wanted that money to be used wisely. So even if I'm not a parent or my kids are out of school, I still want that money spent wisely. And right. If it follows that child to – a new student mid-semester or something, I think that's a great thing. I don't understand why people would be against that.
Right. And I mean, it does introduce that accountability, because if you are, you know, losing students in the middle of the year for whatever reason, you're not going to continue to get the state funding for those students. And I agree with you that I do think it's good. But it is shaking up the status quo. The other component, I don't know if you had heard about this, but the other component of this bill is that it provides early scholarships for students who graduate from high school early, and it would be $2,500 per semester. And again, I think this is great, because, you know, for the students who do have that ability to graduate early, this provides money that they can then take on to college. And from the state's perspective, if those students are graduating early, the state is no longer paying for that student to be sitting in that high school classroom, you know, if they're ready to leave.
Yeah, so they're saving money in the end. So if a kid takes a bunch of advanced placement classes and is testing well and can move into community college instead of doing his last year as a senior, it's helping the child, it's helping the state, it's helping everybody.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, again, it's just important to keep in mind, like, these are the concrete facts and components of this bill, and yet, you know, we're hearing this narrative, you know, this will uproot the educational system. Diane Ravitch, who is a national education commenter, I think said something like Michigan is dismantling its public education system. You know, there is some real concern about this, and yet, I think some of the components are very interesting and make a lot of common sense.
Yeah, it's a shame we can't get the bureaucrats in the school system to actually take a look at it and be reasonable enough to say, well, I like that component, I like this component. You know, in the end, they get paid via the system as it is now, and I guess I can right. understand that they're worried about their jobs or their funding or anything else, but for me, the schools are not getting better no matter how much money we throw at it. So there's got to be another component that we're missing, which I think would be the competition. If you have to fight and market your school better, it makes more sense. Now, I noticed that there was another article in Michigan Capital Confidential about Michael Van Beek, who was doing a little debate with Carrie Birmingham, I think, from Troy Schools. And at one point she says, and I find it very condescending, she's saying, parents won't have the information to make these choices. Like the only experts on school and school data are the teachers. Does she not know about the internet? Does she not know about Mackinac Center? Does she not know about all these abilities of people to go online and see that school is underperforming and I don't want to send my child there?
I do. I'm a data person. So I really sympathize with the wish that somehow there were an equation out there and we could put in all the factors about a school and it'll spit out a number and then we'll know exactly how that school is performing. But that is, that contains, there's a lot of ego when you say, oh, you know, we'll just generate this one measurement and we'll know better than anyone else whether a school is high quality or low quality. Fact of the matter is everyone has different circumstances, everyone has different needs. So, you know, sure, you know, I think you're absolutely right. Parents can go online and research a school's ability, say, or a school's quality when it comes to, say, middle school math. But bottom line, the parent knows more than anyone else what the needs are of his or her particular child. You know, so I can say this school ranks 51 in the 51st percentile in the state, according to my little equation. But for the parent in their particular circumstance, they might very well know, you know, what really matters to my child is the science curriculum and how science is being taught in the school, or how safe the school is, or what after-school programs the school offers. And so I think that's actually the beauty of choice, is it basically lets parents make that decision based on the knowledge that they have, as opposed to a state bureaucrat or an education policy analyst saying, no, I know what is quality and what is not quality, and that's how that's the option that you will have.
Yeah, because even the best, most attentive teacher is not going to know everything about your child. That math teacher may know that your child has a problem with longhand division or whatever, and may even see some personality behaviors or misbehaviors coming out. But in the big picture, it comes from the parent, if the parent's involved, that is, with that parent at home watching the homework, helping with the homework, and seeing the big picture of how even a class that a child struggles in affects the rest of that child's life, you know. And, you know, one of the favorite stories I have is a friend of my wife's daughter was in Ann Arbor schools and didn't do well. They went to, I think, Chelsea schools. They didn't do well. They came to Whitmore Lake schools, which, you know, people have called underachievers or whatever. But it's a small school system. And that child blossomed into a great student because she got more attention from the teachers, from the principal, from the vice principal. And I think that's the difference. And only a parent can see that. A teacher's not going to see that.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I will say that is the one I do struggle with that when we talk about the Education Achievement Authority, you know, the proposal to expand it statewide to basically begin overseeing schools that have been scored poorly according to a state measurement. I do struggle with that because that is a statewide measure that is according to, you know, one or a few people's perception of what is or is not failing. And so I think in general, I'm much more excited about the school aid rewrite because that does put the parents in the driver's seat.
Right.
And, you know, and so that I think is really important. The other kind of neat thing that I really like about the school aid rewrite is that it would allow funding for a student to be split among entities that serve that student. So if you think about it as a parent, you know, say your child is going to Whitmore Lake schools, but your child wants to take, a Chinese language class, and Whitmore Lake does not offer that. You could enroll your child in an online class that does provide that education that's offered by, say, any school district in the state. So say some school district over in West Michigan, for whatever reason, offers an online class in Chinese. You can enroll your student, and state dollars would be appropriately allocated so that that school district could offer your child that one online class and get the appropriate fraction of funding for it. That's pretty neat. That's something that just was not really possible before.
Yeah, and that's a great thing because I think we, you know, as American and patriotic as we want to be, if we don't learn languages, you go to Europe, they teach kids English as well as whatever language. I don't think our children know enough languages. The more languages we know. And I think, you know, in Ann Arbor, this article, they were complaining that students would take a gym class somewhere, a history class somewhere. I don't think that's going to happen. I mean, let's be realistic. I mean, it's probably going to be down to that specialty class that you may have to take online. And online schooling, I think, is the way of the future anyways, don't you?
Yeah, no, I would completely agree. I mean, I would also agree with you that for most students, online classes across the board, those are the only classes they take. I don't think that's the answer, and I don't think that that would necessarily serve their needs. But for the specialty classes, sometimes online can provide the only option. So basically your option there is either I take this class online or I don't have access to it. I know that for some schools, it's difficult to provide those AP courses because you don't have the teachers.
Right.
And online can bridge that gap.
Yeah. Now, Audrey, can you hang with us through the break and continue? Because I've got at least one more question I wanted to ask you. If you can hang tight for a few minutes while we go through this break. All right. Thanks. Well, hang tight. We'll see you on the other side.
Hi. This is Linda Hughes, General Manager at Wham Talk 1600. Christmas is my favorite time of the year for so many reasons. Getting together with family and friends, watching timeless Christmas movies, and of course, the Christmas carols. The best thing about Christmas is that love is in the air. It's the miracle that happened on that very first Christmas night. Linus says it best.
For unto you is born this day in the city of David a Savior, Jesus Christ the Lord. That's what Christmas is all about, Charlie Brown.
Merry Christmas, everyone.
Fox News Radio, I'm Carol McHugh. A partial collapse of the three-mile-long Sasago Tunnel in Japan has killed at least five and injured several others. Rescue crews had a hard time getting to the scene.
There was a fire inside. We think that came after the collapse. That prevented them from gaining access. I think a number of those who died as a result of the fire rather than the collapse itself.
Sky News correspondent Mark Stone. There's no movement to report from either side as the debate over averting the fiscal cliff drags on. So what would actually happen should no deal be reached and we go over that cliff?
One of the first things that would happen is that people's paychecks would be a little bit less because the payroll tax exemption would end. The IRS says tax refunds might be delayed until its computers can be reprogrammed, but the New York Times reports that government officials, tax specialists, and business experts don't expect any immediate major implications.
Fox News Radio, Steve Knight. Fox News, we report. You decide.
It's time now for Wham Talk 1600's Community Calendar with Brandon Drake.
Wham Talk 1600 and the Salvation Army are conducting our sixth annual toy drive. The goal is to collect 1,600 toys for 1,600 girls and boys that are in need this Christmas season. Visit whamradio.com for our sponsor drop-off locations. Let's make sure every child in need has a wonderful Christmas. For more information, call 734-971-1600, extension 23. The Alzheimer's Association has launched two free resources for families impacted by Alzheimer's disease. The Alzheimer's Association's Alzheimer's Navigator is an online tool to help caregivers and people with dementia evaluate their needs, identify action steps, and connect with local programs and services. The other free resource, ALZ Connected, is powered by the Alzheimer's Association and is the first social networking community designed for people living with Alzheimer's and their caregivers. For more information on Alzheimer's disease or available resources, visit alz.org or call 800-272-3900. The Leslie Science and Nature Center will have a lantern-lit full moon walk Friday, December 28th from 6 to 7:30 p.m. $6 per person, $21 per family, free for Leslie Science and Nature Center members. Join the Leslie Science and Nature Center for an enchanting self-led lantern-lit walk through Black Pond Woods. Afterwards, you'll warm up around the fire with hot cocoa and stories. For more information about this event and others, visit lesliesnc.org or call 734-997-1553.
You've been listening to the Wham Community Calendar. To have your event publicized, email community at whamradio.com.
Hey friends, stay around here. I had the weirdest dream the other day. I was giving mouth-to-mouth resuscitation to a goat. It was a cute goat.
Crazy.
It was crazy, and the goat was trapped beneath a burning oil tanker out on I-94. And through the window of the tanker, I could hear the driver. He was listening to the radio. That is before he was engulfed in flames. He was listening to the Bone Conduction Music Show.
Join Theron for the rockinest show on the radio. It's the Bone Conduction Music Show. Crazy. Every Sunday night at 7 p.m. right here on Wham! Talk 1600.
You're listening to The Drift on Wham! Talk 1600. Join in the conversation at 734-822-1600. Now, back to your host, Gary Wellings.
Well, welcome back. Thank you for catching my drift this Sunday morning. We have a guest on the line. It's Audrey Spaulding, education policy analyst and an expert, shall we say, from Mackinac Center Public Policy. Audrey, thank you again for coming on this morning. I have a question that's bothered me for years, and I want to know if this these new reforms may tackle it or answer it. Isn't there always been a variance between what children in different school districts receive? Like Bloomfield Hills always seemed to me to get more money per student than, say, here in Whitmore Lake. Is that being addressed at all, or was there ever a good reason for that?
Yeah, so I think you're referring to the reforms that were made, I believe, in 1994 with Proposal A, and the school districts that were spending a lot at the time were basically assured that they could continue to receive a larger amount of state funds. Honestly, I don't think, I don't know. I'm not going to speculate on that. I do know that this proposal is supposedly revenue neutral. Richard McClellan has said that within 5 years, it's not going to cost the state more money. But in terms of whether it's going to equalize it among districts, I don't think I can speak to that.
Okay. That's a question I would love to know, because it's always seemed blatantly unfair to me. A smaller district is already struggling to get up on par. Why they would get less than Ann Arbor schools? Because it always seems that way. The rich areas seem to get more money. And if you're talking about fairness, it should cost the same, I would think, for a student in Bloomfield to get a history class as a student in Detroit. And you yourself, yeah. I think you said a few minutes ago, the Highland Park students were getting, what, like $20,000 apiece?
Well, they were spending that much.
Yes, spending that kind spending that kind of money and getting the most substandard education, because they do, that school district is in trouble, correct?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, and I think also the other general education policy question is, even you can talk about how much money is spent per student at the district level, but frequently there are variations within the schools of that district. So perhaps the elementary school within that district might be spending much less than, say, the high school within that district.
Right.
I think that's actually a very interesting question in terms of just taking a look at how exactly are we spending money, and, should a school, say, in Houghton, in the Upper Peninsula, be getting equal funding as a school in Detroit?
Okay, so to wrap it up, I guess, House Bill 604 and House Bill 5923, they're different? Are they going to get merged? Do we know what's going to happen with those two House bills, or are they so different that they're just going to try and pass them separately?
I don't know if they're going to get merged. In terms of the political landscape, obviously, this is going to go through 2013. This isn't going to get passed in the lame duck session, so we're going to see more of this. In terms of the school aid rewrite, right now they're soliciting feedback on that, so it could change between now and 2013. And I suspect that many school officials are, in fact, submitting feedback on that on that proposal, and we'll just see how drastic or whether those proposed changes are incorporated.
Right. So the best thing a parent can do, the best thing a voter can do at this point is to educate themselves on this issue. And you guys have some great information there at Michigan Capital Confidential and the Mackinac Center. And I've got all the links at thedailydrift.com and currentonline.com. And I want to push people to do that. Don't take my word for it. And I know, Audrey, you can't tell people to vote one way or the other. But thank you so much for bringing this information forward, just because I've gotten an education out of it. And I guess people should contact their legislators to give their opinions and tell them to do what I think is a smart idea, to reform the schools in a way that will help our students. So let me ask you, I hate to put you on the spot too. Do you have any opinions or general idea of what's going on with the Obamacare exchanges while I got you on the phone?
Yeah, sure. Of course, the state, Michigan, is not going to be doing a state Obamacare exchange that failed, I believe, last week. It sounds like Governor Snyder is pursuing a partnership exchange, which kind of mitigates some of those issues with the state exchanges. Nationally, I think Obamacare with the exchanges is really interesting because, we did have the November election, and then President Obama was reelected, and is kind of viewing that as a mandate to pursue his agenda. But at the state level, I believe 16 different states have rejected Obamacare and said, no, we're not going to set up this exchange. So it's putting the federal government in a really, I think, a tight spot and kind of an interesting spot, because you have that tension between the states and the federal government.
Yeah, and I noticed that Jack McHugh, also from CapCon, had a nice article, and he talked about those 16 states that aren't participating, another 11 that are undecided, and I guess we are not going to go that way now, correct?
Right.
And So I think it does. He goes on to talk about the states being the fall guy because we all know this is going to fail. It's just another crazy bureaucratic power grab out of Washington. And if the states refuse to comply with it, they won't get in the same – well, at least they won't be blamed for mm-hmm. the same mistakes that the federal government is making. Do you think that the other options available to us now, including Rick Snyder's, is that much better, or is it just the lesser of two evils?
Oh, definitely the lesser of two evils. And again, it just raises legally, you know, I think a lot of this is going to end up being decided through litigation. Jack, of course, has mentioned the Oklahoma lawsuit, which is saying effectively if you don't have a state exchange, you can't have the subsidies that Obamacare would provide through the state exchange. And then because of that, you cannot enforce the mandate on employers. So as an employer, if you're not providing the level of health care that Obamacare would require you to provide and there's no state exchange, then perhaps there can be no penalty exacted upon you without that state exchange. And so litigation-wise, I think that's really going to be interesting, you know, to see what happens in these states that are not having state exchanges or are setting up the partnership exchange.
Okay, so this is so complicated for me. I just it really does. I looked at it and I'm like, oh my gosh, do I even want to tackle this today? Now, we noticed that the Supreme Court, are you familiar with the Supreme Court's bringing back one of the Obamacare cases on a different portion, I guess, of the case? Are you familiar with that one at all?
No, I'm not.
Okay, well, we're going to let that one – we'll let sleeping dogs lie in that one because I'm not prepared to go on into that one either. But obviously, this is a complicated issue. And for me, just even reading your guys' stuff every day, I was like, wait a minute. If we didn't pass the exchange and now we're going to let the federal government handle it, isn't that even worse? But then you read through mm-hmm. the material and you're like, oh, no, it's all right. It's now just the – it is the lesser of two evils. And so
– I mean, it is. You know, it's basically if, as a state, you're not cooperating with Obamacare. And there's that message component to it, you know, that you're saying that, you know, we don't agree with this or that we have some serious reservations for it or, as Jack and you both put it, that we don't want to serve as the fall guy if this thing fails and it sounds like it's going to. So I just think, you know, in the next year or next 2 years, we're going to see all kinds of litigation and all kinds of political finagling in terms of passing the buck.
Right. Well, it's the bureaucrats at their best doing what they do. Well, Audrey, right. Thank you so much for coming on. We'll have to have you on again, and I'll encourage readers to look for Audrey Spaulding on Michigan Capital Confidential and Mackinac Center. You guys do a great job. Thank you to everybody up there, and thanks to you for getting up so early in the morning to come on the show with us.
Glad to do it. Thanks so much for having me.
Okay. Thank you, Audrey. I appreciate it.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye-bye. Okay, so Audrey Spaulding. Michigan Capital Confidential, again, without a doubt, probably one of the best sources of information in the state of Michigan and nationally for that matter. They do a great job of making things convenient for you to read and get through. And the writers are all good. They don't write stuffy. They write for the layman. You can read through it and understand it most of the time. So let's take our sponsor this half hour real quick before we go into a break, The Current. CurrentOnline.com, C-O-U-R-A-N-T online. The December Current is out. It should be in your mailboxes this weekend. It's available online. We have the new flip docs. It makes it easier to go through. You don't have to download it and wait for it because it is such a big paper nowadays. You can grow your business like we've grown ours. We've grown in size by 6 times in the last 5 years. So we were at 5,000. We're now at 37,000 we print now. 32,000 of those get mailed directly to customers' mailboxes. So you can grow your business by advertising with us. Call Sam Iaquinto, 734-323-0777. Call Sam and find out how we can help you. Let us help market your business like we've marketed ours. Or you can go to CurrentOnline.com, CourantOnline.com, and all the information is there on the index page. So we're going to run into a break, and when we come back, we'll talk a little bit about some national politics. See you on the other side.
Join the entire Wham staff this Saturday from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. as we broadcast live from Three Cedars Farms, Curtis Road and 6 Mile in Salem Township. The whole family will enjoy this festive event. Enjoy cider and donuts, shop at the general store, and visit the life-size nativity. The little ones will want to see Santa Claus.
Ho, ho, ho! Merry Christmas!
Create a family memory that will become a Christmas tradition. All your favorite Wham personalities will be there. Theron X, Joe Gannon, Matt Clark, Dr. Dave Janda, Jay McNally, Ed Hoffman, Gary Wellings, and Dan Martin. We will be collecting new unwrapped toys for our annual Salvation Army Toy Drive. 1,600 toys for 1,600 girls and boys. Please bring a toy for this worthy cause. Join us this Saturday at Three Cedars Farms, Curtis Road at 6 Mile. Take Plymouth Road to Curtis. Go north. For more information, call 734-971-1600.
Hi, I'm Natalie Cole. In 2008, I was diagnosed with chronic hepatitis C. It was a shock, to say the least. But I decided to take action, and so I met with my doctors, and we talked about my options. I've never stopped singing, but now I'm using my voice to encourage others to take action. If you have chronic hepatitis C, doing nothing is not an option. Talk to your doctor. And please, log on to tuneintohepc.com for more information. Thank you.
Us every Sunday morning for Wham's Weekend Worship. At 9 a.m. it's the Lutheran Hour, followed by the Christian Science Sentinel at 9:30. At 10 o'clock, we join Bethlehem United Church of Christ for their live weekly service. Finally, we visit the First Presbyterian Church of Ann Arbor from 11 to noon. Start your week off right with Wham Talk 1600.
What's your favorite color? Tell us, please.
Kids will spend 20 minutes listening to songs like this.
What's your favorite color?
How about 2 minutes to brush their teeth? Brushing for 2 minutes now can save your child from severe tooth pain later. For fun 2-minute videos to watch while brushing, visit 2min2x.org. 2 minutes twice a day. They have the time. A message from the Partnership for Healthy Mouths, Healthy Lives, and the Ad Council.
This is the Clark Cast with Matt Clark.
With my generation, they realize, well, wait a minute, I want free contraception. Well, wait a minute, I want this, I want that. Well, wait a minute, well, wait a minute, well, wait a minute. And you can go on a long list of stuff that my generation and those that have been on the dole for quite some time want to continue to have. They don't realize, A, where that comes from, and B, why it's not sustainable.
Don't miss the Clark Cast live Sunday afternoons, 1 to 3 p.m. Eastern.
I'm Susan Lucci. More than 2 million Americans have a type of irregular heartbeat called atrial fibrillation, or AFib, putting them at greater risk of stroke.
I'm Dr. David Willis, and I frequently see patients with AFib, a serious condition where a blood clot can travel from the heart to the brain, causing a stroke.
When I found out my husband, Helmut, had AFib, I pledged to learn everything I could.
Susan and I, along with my doctor, work as a team to help reduce my risk of AFib-related stroke.
Visit facingafib.com today.
Hi, I'm Dr. Dave Janda, host of Operation Freedom, broadcasting live from Wham Talk 1600's Freedom Bunker every Sunday from 3 to 5. We are the only operating room in all of radio. Every Sunday in our OR, we dissect current events with the help of guests that NM Media are afraid to bring to light. Our goal is to educate and empower you. I hope you'll join our OR team every Sunday from 3 to 5 right here at Wham Talk 1600.
Yeah!
You're catching the drift. Gary Wellings and the Drift. Send the Drift on Wham Talk 1600. Call 734-822-1600 to join in the discussion.
And welcome back. Thank you for catching my drift this Sunday morning. I was going to go into right to work, but I think we've covered enough at the state level for today. We'll save that for next week, and that's huge anyways. But the other big news this week was the physical cliff. Physical cliff is coming. And we're not seeing any real strides to fix it. Now, the Republicans have, of course, as you've been, if you've been watching the news, at least Fox News, the liberal media won't tell you about it. But the Republicans are reaching out and they're actually talking about revenues, which I'm not sure is the right thing to do. But at least they're making that offer. I guess for me, you can't fight what's coming down the pipe for so long. So you got to pick and choose your battles. I think if Obama wants to tax anyone over $250,000 more, if he's calling that the 1%, I think that's a huge mistake. Because you know what? $250,000 a year for someone who lives in New York City or San Francisco or even L.A., that's not wealthy. That is not wealthy by any stretch of the imagination, especially when you consider most of those people in that range from $250,000 to $1 million are small business owners who have huge expenses of their own to try and keep a business afloat. So you can't particularly call somebody wealthy because they may have income coming in of $1 million a year or $250,000 a year. I think that's a huge mistake. And, you know, if you want to talk about raising the taxes on maybe those making $10, $20, $100 million a year, maybe those are the people you could tax a little higher. But the point is, even if you do that, how much money is it going to bring in? And I wanted to get all the stats for you on this, but I just didn't have time. But I think you've heard it well enough and so many times that if Obama gets his way and the Republicans bend over and say, fine, let's go with the tax hike on the top 1%, it literally buys you 8 days of federal government spending. 8 days. And now at 9.5 or 10, call it rounded up to $10 billion a day that the federal government spends, that's $80 billion. Does anyone not understand the difference between $80 billion and $1 trillion? We overspend in this country, the federal government does, by $1.6 trillion, almost getting close to $2 trillion a year. And if you're only going to add $80 billion by taxing these rich folk, you're not even coming close. You're wasting your time. You're wasting my time as a taxpayer. You're wasting my money as a taxpayer. And why aren't people not understanding the basic math? We can't tax our way out of this. There is no way to tax our way out of this. We have to tackle entitlements. That means there has to be changes to Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid. There has to be changes to the entitlements for federal government employees, state government employees. We can't keep this sustained spending going. It's just not possible. Obama, of course, the campaigner-in-chief, is tackling this like he's tackled everything else. He's just on the road spewing nonsense. Because that's all the man knows how to do is spew nonsense. Let's hear the first part of track one there, Derek.
And all of us are going to have to get out of our comfort zones to make that happen. I'm willing to do that. I'm hopeful that enough members of Congress in both parties are willing to do that as well. We can solve these problems. But where the clock is really ticking right now is on middle-class taxes.
Okay, so you heard him say he's willing to do it, and yet he hasn't put anything on the table to cut. You know, get out of your comfort zone. You just said it, Obama. Get out of your comfort zone, and let's talk about cutting something. All you want to do is spend because it's not your money. It's our money, but you're willing to spend our money to oblivion. Get out of your comfort zone and put something realistic on the table. Let's talk about some cuts. How about we get rid of some of these idiot programs that you don't need? That would be a start. At least it's showing us something. But he hasn't put one cut on the table, and that's what's the most aggravating to listen to this guy. Let's keep rolling that track, Derek.
At the end of the year, middle-class taxes that are currently in place are set to expire. Middle-class tax cuts that are currently in place are set to expire. There are two things that can happen. If Congress does nothing, every family in America will see their income taxes automatically go up on January 1st. Every family, everybody here, you'll see your taxes go up on January 1st. I mean, I'm assuming that doesn't sound too good to you. That's sort of like the lump of coal you get for Christmas. That's a Scrooge Christmas.
All right, Scrooge Christmas. You are the Scrooge, Mr. Obama, because you want to blame the GOP for holding the middle class hostage. That's nonsense. The one who's holding the middle class hostage, because you're the hostage taker in chief, you don't want to even put any cuts on the table. because you don't get it. You don't understand. It's not the GOP holding anybody hostage. That money that you want to tax the rich people is not going to do a darn thing to help the federal government control its deficit or its spending or its obligations to other people. Now, Tim Geithner came out and spewed the same nonsense that Obama's been spewing for the last 2 months. Let's give you some revenues now and we'll talk about giving you some cuts later. We know what happens when the government says that. We'll give them more money and yet the cuts will never come. So the Republicans really need to say absolutely not. Now, if you hadn't heard this before, I don't have that track ready, unfortunately. But Charles Krauthammer said it probably best on Fox News. He said the Republicans cannot give one iota on this because if you do, you get nothing back. When the only card you're holding is the ability to force Obama's hand, you don't give it away. So you don't bend over and give some additional revenues to the federal government when you're getting nothing in return. So should we hit the fiscal cliff? I think I have to agree with some other pundits and say, you know what? They don't understand. The American people don't seem to understand. And the only way they're going to understand is to hit rock bottom. And I talked about that in my editorial this month in the December Current. We are addicted to spending. We've talked about it before. People don't understand that you can't keep spending this kind of money because it's not affecting you yet. But once it does affect you, then you will understand why we can't spend $4 billion a day that we do not have. You know, it's that illusion that the government is all-powerful and has trees with money growing on them. They don't. They can print money, but every dollar they print makes the dollar in your bank account worth less. That's the quantitative easing. You're going to see more quantitative easing. And Tim Geithner showed up with the GOP to talk about Obama's plans. He asked for more money to spend. And the money he was asking for a stimulus was greater than what they were even willing to concede on reductions in spending. So they don't get it. The Democrats don't get it. The liberals don't get it. Barack Hussein Obama doesn't get it. And unfortunately, 51% of the American people yet do not get it. And the only way they will understand and come to this understanding is to hit rock bottom. So for me, I think it's ready to and time to go and hit the fiscal cliff. Let it happen. Is it going to be pretty? Absolutely not. Many of us will lose our jobs. But you can't come back until you hit rock bottom. All right, till next week, do your homework. Go to thedailydrift.com. I put a lot of work into that website. If you find problems with it, email me, please, and I'll fix them. It's a great website. You've got a lot more information. You can catch a podcast of the radio. So until next week, stay educated.